Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest today is Kim Hooper, the author of the brand new novel, Tiny. It is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Turner Publishing. Kim was on our program a couple of years ago with her fantastic debut novel, People Who Knew Me. It was one of the best books I read that year. She followed that up last year with Cherry Blossoms and this year with Tiny. Kim, we've got three people here. It's told from this perspective of Nate and Annie, a married couple, who lose a child due to an automobile accident. She's hit while she's in the middle of the road. She's hit by a fellow named Josh. And the third perspective we get in the book is Josh. And it's how all three of these folks deal with it. So as you went from perspective to perspective as you wrote this book, what did you have to keep in mind as you were trying to put yourself into each one of these people's, in these people's minds and how they were each grieving differently?
Right. So I wrote this book when I was in the midst of my own kind of grieving process. My husband and I were trying to have a baby. I had four pregnancy losses, including one that was like halfway through the pregnancy. So it was kind of traumatic. And so I started this book because I saw how my husband and I were grieving so differently. And when I started the husband character, who is Nate, it began as kind of like my husband as a character. So a lot of traits of him, and Annie is kind of like a dramatized version of me. And when I thought about Josh, the third person in the scenario, I thought nobody ever explores, you know, the person who's behind the scenes of the tragedy. So anytime I read a story in the newspaper about somebody who gets hit by a car, or, you know, when it's just like a plane accident, there's not like a fault, I think, gosh, the person that is living with that, like, what is that like? So I wanted to add that third perspective to kind of round out the story and, you know, kind of show the human element for all of the parties involved.
And it was also important for Josh. He was a very decent man, and it was truly an accident, right?
Yes. I mean, yes, there's nothing he did wrong. It was just one of those things that, you know, wrong place, wrong time, and he has to live with that. And he's just, you know, a young kid. He's 22 years old. So I thought the drama of that was really interesting to explore.
Nate and Annie have a lot of strife between them, not just because of losing a daughter, even though that's incredibly tragic for any parent, but because of the way, as you mentioned before, how each of them grieve. And they're in couples counseling, and they're each trying to deal with that. The scenes that you have with the counselor, though, what did you draw on to grab the realism of that? I've never been to couples counseling, but I can imagine now. I can imagine now. It's not a great experience.
No. Well, I mean, it depends. I guess there's some people who really love it. I have a friend who considers it like a date night, which I think is weird. But my husband and I did go to couples. We went to a grief counselor when we were going through our experience. And so I pulled some of that feel of the sessions that we had with that therapist. But, I mean, largely it was fictionalized in terms of content. But there's a lot of strife in those sessions with couples because, like you said, I mean, couples really do grieve differently. I think there is some gender stereotyping involved that actually ends up being truth. Men are often very, and I've looked into this too when I was researching the book, men are usually fixers and they tend to keep a lot of things inside. So whereas women like to talk things through and kind of come to a roundabout solution and processing of their feelings, men are kind of very quiet until they have a set solution to something. And if there isn't a solution, which is usually the case when you're grieving, they can get very quiet, very distant. There's a lot of anger. So I think exploring that in the husband-wife scenario was really interesting for me. I mean, I had to do it for personal reasons, but it was also just interesting just from a human point of view.
And then the story takes us to Annie's journey to try to deal with all this stuff, moves into a tiny house. I've got to admit, I've heard of these tiny houses. I'd seen pictures of them, never knew it was any type of movement. I thought it was just something you could buy. But to add the tiny house thing in here, I thought was brilliant because it gave me a view of a whole new world that I never knew before. Where did the tiny house idea come from for you, and what's been your experience in seeing them?
Yeah, so I have, ever since, I think it was 2014, I read an article in the New York Times about a woman named Dee Williams who, she sold like most of her possessions, and she moved into this 84 square foot tiny house. And for some reason, I was just so drawn to the story because I just thought, wow. To me, it didn't seem like a hard thing. It seemed like, wow, how liberating that must be to really simplify and focus your life in that way, you know, to not have all the clutter and all the worry and to just have everything contained. So it was always in the back of my head, this tiny house thing. And at that point, I was getting married and, you know, acquiring pets, and now I have a daughter. So, you know, having a tiny house is not very practical for me, but I always had it in my head that I wanted to put a character in one. And I thought, you know, who would want to simplify their life to that drastic, dramatic degree? And Dee Williams, the woman who was in the New York Times article, she had gone through kind of like facing her mortality. She was diagnosed with a potentially fatal heart condition, I believe. And I just thought that's the type of thing that would make you want to simplify that drastically. So for me, Annie wanted to go to the tiny house to kind of contain all these raging feelings from her grieving process. And I think she's hoping that by putting herself in this little house, it'll kind of be like hugging her in a way, kind of holding her feelings for her. So I think there's like a very symbolic reason why she's seeking out the comfort of this tiny house. It's kind of an escape, but at the same time, I think she just needs to feel like things aren't so big and unsurmountable.
Well, the book takes place in Southern California, and that seems to be where a lot of the movement is, and as a lot of things start there. But millennials, seems like they're drawn to these tiny houses because the price of real estate in California is so high. How much of a factor is that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I watch a lot of the tiny house shows that are on HGTV, and I think it is tempting when you're in California and the average home price is something like $700,000 and you can buy a tiny house for $50,000 to $100,000. And then some of the ones that are $100,000 are really nice. And they don't have to be 84 square feet like Dee Williams' house was. You know, they can be 300 square feet, you know, which is probably the size of my first studio apartment. So, you know, I think there's something to it. And I think people are kind of embracing doing life differently. Like, not everybody wants the cookie cutter suburban house anymore. Some people want to be off the grid and want to have kind of an unconventional experience. There's people who are living in airstreams. There's people who are living in, you know, tents in national parks in some places out here. So, I mean, there's, you know, different ways of living in a life. And I think millennials especially are kind of showing the, you know, the different ways that you can do things. It's not necessarily how our parents were doing it.
I'm chatting with Kim Hooper about her brand new novel, Tiny. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. You can go online and pick it up, or in bookstores if you can still find one in your location. But Kim, the setting for a lot of the book takes place Capistrano Beach, kind of halfway between Long Beach and San Diego, right in there, right?
Yeah, I actually live in Capistrano Beach, so that's why I say this book is very personal to me in many ways. But, yeah, it's in South Orange County, right before you get to the San Diego County line.
And the scenes you describe in there, I've never been to Capistrano Beach. Did you get all the realism right so your Capistrano Beach readers are going to recognize places?
They should. They should definitely recognize places, I would think. I didn't name everything, but there are some things I named. There's Dana Point Harbor that's right near us, and I name one of the dive bars that's been around here for years. It's called Turks, and that's in the book. So I'll have to stop by and tell the owner that they made their way into my novel.
Well, did the location matter a whole lot for Nate and Annie? I mean, I know it was personal to you, but for Nate and Annie and Josh, how important was the actual location to what they went through or how this book played out?
I mean, I think the story honestly could have been set almost anywhere, because it is more of a relationship story. It's about the relationship between Nate and Annie as husband and wife, and then how Josh kind of becomes part of their life in a strange way. So I think it could have been set anywhere. Because it felt like such a personal story to me emotionally, I just, without thinking, set it in my hometown. to me, I think it could be set anywhere.
Capistrano Beach sounds like an incredibly beautiful area. And what's it like as far as for a literary culture?
Well, it's right near Laguna Beach, which has a lot of writers that and artists that live there. Capistrano Beach, to me, is very inspiring. It's kind of like a little hidden gem. A lot of people don't know that this area exists. it's kind of hidden, and a lot of the residents have lived here for, you know, decades. So it has a cute little rich history. It kind of has a small town vibe. You definitely go for a run and you see your neighbors, and you go to the local store and you see people you recognize. So it definitely has that smaller town vibe. It's very quiet and peaceful. So, I mean, I wish if I didn't have a full-time job, I'd be sitting at my desk looking out my window at the palm trees and writing all day if I could. So it's inspiring to me.
As the character of Josh came to you and you were writing him, I got to admit, when I read the character, parts of me were creeped out. Parts of me felt completely sorry for him. I think he was the most diverse character because there were so many elements to him. The husband and wife thing was kind of a simple, it was a simple tragedy to understand their feelings. Yes. The Josh, I couldn't relate to any of those feelings because I've never experienced that before. How complicated is that in your mind to write that character, to get into that mindset? Because it's not like you can go talk to somebody that's killed a kid and find out what it's like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most you can do is just imagine, like, wow, what would that be like, especially at that age? I mean, at that young of an age when you really are kind of grasping with who you are in the world, and to have something like that happen and trying to make sense of it. You know, I think some of his actions are very desperate. Some of them are, you know, maybe not the wisest, but I think he's just trying to figure out how to live with this, that this happened to him, and how to get some kind of forgiveness for himself or from others. But he was probably the most fun to write because I felt like there was a lot of complexity there, and just trying to put myself in his shoes was something. It just felt very interesting to do that. Like I haven't really written a character like that before. So definitely adds like a layer to the story that I think was necessary, and it was probably the most interesting for me to write.
And I can't give anything away on plot spoilers because I'm not going to get too overly general here, but when the relationship between Annie's parents and Nate here, when you wrote that, it was, you got all that added strife to what they were going through at the time, but what was the focus to try to bring them in, and was that essentially to just cause an additional headache for Nate as he went through his grieving process?
Yeah, and I think it does. I mean, in-laws, everyone talks about in-laws, right?
Yeah.
And I think they can kind of swoop in at times that, you know, can complicate things for a couple who's going through something. So I think everybody's intentions are always good. It's hard. Like, I look at my husband, and I'm sure my parents have swooped in times, and he's been kind of like, ugh. So, I mean, I guess, understand that perspective, and I wanted to write about it just to, you know, add some real life color to that, because I think everyone can relate to that. You know, your wife's parents swooping in when you're both going through something, or your husband's parents swooping in when you're both trying to get through something. Of course, they're going to have their own opinions and their own beliefs about the best way to sort things out, and you know, it can kind of complicate things for the couple. So I think that's kind of a universal thing that people go through on different levels. Obviously, Nate and Annie are in an extreme situation, but I just thought the addition of her parents, it kind of heightened the drama between them as a couple, and, you know, kind of added something a little extra to the story.
Well, I tell you, this book was about a three-hour read for me, two-and-a-half, three-hour read. I read it straight through.
Wow.
It kept my attention for that long, not even getting up to leave. So it was just a gripping story because there's so many emotional elements involved. The book is called Tiny. It's the brand-new novel from Kim Hooper. Go pick up a copy. If you have not read her previous two books, Cherry Blossoms is available now, and as is People Who Knew Me. People Who Knew Me, if you have not read it, is one of the finest books I've read in the last 5 years. So that was an amazing piece of literature. So, but Kim, best of luck with this new book, Tiny, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun. Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, all the same.